The Tom Woods Show, episode 1607.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, make it your New Year's resolution to stop going to the post office. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer, and with my promo code WOODS, you get a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in WOODS. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Very glad indeed to be joined today by Angela McArdle, who chairs the Libertarian Party of Los Angeles County. I just like Angela a lot. She's very smart, very principled, extremely hardworking, and frankly, just a lot of fun to talk to. And she's done so many interesting and clever and creative things to spread the message that I thought, doggone it, it is a crime that over 1,600 episodes of The Tom Woods Show, featuring practically a who's who of the libertarian movement, have gone by without Angela McArdle. So we're going to rectify that omission right now. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. I think you're a really interesting person. Just following you on Facebook, you're funny, you have a personality. This right away puts you at the top 2% of the libertarian world, even knowing nothing further. But I know you work really hard at your job and you pour what seems to be just an inexhaustible amount of energy into the libertarian cause and the Libertarian Party in particular, out in the Los Angeles area where you live. It's just unbelievable to me, the work you put in. I mean, you remind me of the old Woods before he became a lazy bum. You know, back when I used to produce stuff, that I see myself in Angela McArdle. So obviously I want to talk about some of these things that you do, but I want my audience to know you. And I don't know your actual story. So when I bring somebody new on, a lot of times I want to know, how did they get to be not like the rest of us? So what's your story? Are you one of these born libertarians that I am envious of, that they didn't have to come to anything because they just knew it? Or was this a long time coming for you, or what?
Oh, no. My origin story has two parts, and the first part is pretty boring. I live in California now, but I moved here from the South. I grew up in just a very traditional conservative home and had sort of an interesting but underwhelming chat with an older guy who was in a metal band when I was 17. We were just talking about politics, and I told him, you know, that I really cared about the government not wasting a bunch of money and taxes, but I wasn't so sure about the government and the whole gay rights thing and not letting gay people get married and putting people in jail for drugs. Made me a little bit uncomfortable. And he just said, well, you might be a libertarian. And so I said, okay, I guess I'm a libertarian.
So, well, I don't want to ask what year that would have been, because you just gave us your age and people will, at the time, people calculate, I don't want to do that. But let's just say, what was your first political memory?
So the thing that really opened up my eyes and had me really searching down the rabbit hole was when I read The Creature from Jekyll Island. And that got me really interested in the Federal Reserve. And that wasn't that long ago. Maybe that was like 2009, 2010. That got me really interested in libertarianism. I'd already heard about Ron Paul in 2008. I was really interested from that perspective, but it didn't mean anything to me personally until I sort of saw my worldview and monetary policy implode. That really blew my mind. So that is what lit a fire under me and started getting me more interested in how libertarianism and the government impacts me in a personal way.
Yeah. Now, the thing about that book, a lot of people who haven't read it draw conclusions about it that are really not true. G. Edward Griffin is actually really, really good on economics. A lot of people who are critical of the Fed, who aren't really part of our movement, go off the rails a bit, or their criticisms of the Fed are either irrelevant or downright wrong. Whereas Griffin is really steeped in good, solid Austrian economics. It's a good book. But reading, getting somebody to read a book as long as The Creature from Jekyll Island, that's half the battle. I mean, yeah, it's nice if you're persuaded by it at the end, but just getting somebody to read it is impressive. What on earth persuaded you to pick up a book like that in the first place?
I have no idea. I just like to read long, boring, detailed stuff. You know, I'm a big like sci-fi fantasy nerd too, and the more tedious and articulate and detailed it is, the better.
I want to know how every I want to know how every dollar was spent. I want to know what the blade of grass looked like as someone climbed up a hill. You can't out detail me enough. I just really enjoy it. So naturally, I really enjoyed that book. Do I recommend that for someone as their first reading? No, definitely not. I'll tell them to pick up something like Liberty Defined by Ron Paul. That's a much better option.
Yeah, right. No doubt about it. So how'd you get involved in the Libertarian Party to the point where now what's your official title?
I am the chair of the Libertarian Party of Los Angeles County, and I'm on the executive committee for the Libertarian Party of California.
Okay, so how'd that come about?
I got involved with the party. Well, I attended meetings and, you know, social events. I started attending in 2016 after I'd been involved in a lot of activism, just sort of in an anarcho-capitalist capacity prior to that. And then the current chair of the party at that time, Ted Brown, asked me to run for Congress because no one was running in my district in 2017. So I said no, because I'm an anarchist. And then he really just laid it on thick and pressured me. And eventually I folded, I ran for Congress, and I just got really active in the party afterwards because I saw what a wonderful outreach tool it is. Even if you don't win, you get this great platform. You get microphones shoved in your face. You get all kinds of media attention. All of a sudden, your friends do want to hear about your annoying economic policies, especially when they're being taxed to death like they are in California.
Now, you would think there would be more people in California who put two and two together and see that the problem is that California has been made very inhospitable for a lot of people, particularly business, and that this is going to have an effect on you. The idea that we can just continually impose demands on the private sector and these will just be forever absorbed with no consequences to the rest of us, I find it hard to believe there are a whole lot of people who could seriously believe that, and yet here we are.
It's a strange phenomenon. People are in denial about the economic reality of California until all of a sudden they're not. All of a sudden, it's Bernie bro, Bernie or bust. Oh, crap, I'm moving to Arizona. That seems to be how it works.
So how long have you lived there?
I have lived in California since, I believe, 1998.
Has there ever been a time when you've said, that's it, this is too much, I'm leaving? Or is it one of these cases where, so a lot of people ask if would I ever leave the United States? And my answer is no way. I would feel like a fish out of water anywhere else. I mean, yes, there could be a lot of things that annoy me, but I'm just not leaving. Is that how you feel about California?
Yeah, I'm going down with the ship. I mean, I know that our economics and our politics are really bad, but honestly, I live in the entertainment capital of the world. There's about 11 million people in Los Angeles County, which also means that we're going to have a good chunk of libertarians. Even if the percentage is small, the number, the social scene is pretty great. So I really enjoy living here. In addition to the LP, we've got the Bastiat Society, Liberty on the Rocks. There's at least 10 liberty-related events a month.
That is unbelievable. That's unbelievable because there have been a couple people I've met on the Contra Cruise that we do every year, except next year, who have told me they've never met a libertarian in their entire lives until the cruise, not ever. So you have the exact opposite experience of that. Now, by the way, that's fun a lot of the time. but on the other hand, every now and again, you run into a libertarian you're not necessarily as happy to have met as, let's say, some others. But all the same, I love our people. Were you involved at all in the Ron Paul campaign the second time around? I can't remember if you said that or not.
I was not actively involved in the campaign. I was just a supporter and someone who was interested and following along at that point. In the 2012 campaign, you mean?
Yes. I just mean, were you at a point where you were a sympathizer or cheering for him by 2012?
Oh, absolutely.
Because definitely. I remember in 2012 being pretty involved in that. And the libertarian world seemed so much more unified. Just, it seems like a lifetime ago. It's only 8 years. And we all got along pretty well. But yeah, that we knew there were some fault lines here and there. But, you know, here we had an anti-war, anti-Fed guy who was fearless, who had an untwistable arm on the national stage. And we all thought it was exciting. And you know, I have a different lifestyle from some other people, and they have a different one from me. And it just didn't matter. We all loved each other, really. And we didn't go around trying to see the most What's the most uncharitable way I can interpret what this guy said 30 years ago? Some ridiculous thing like that. We didn't do that to each other because we were normal human beings looking for common ground. And it was just such a great time. And it's such a, you know, interesting contrast to today, let's say.
Absolutely. I really see that. And, you know, I was very active in the party in 2018. I was at the national convention. And of course, there's a lot of libertarian infighting. That's the norm now. But with all the activity that I do with the Mises Caucus, and I'm the state coordinator for California, I do feel really passionate about bringing us back together and having a unified front. And I really do see it happening. I'm really excited about the Jacob Hornberger campaign. I'm really excited about what the Mises Caucus is doing. And despite some of the resistance and noise on the fringes, we really are bringing together all different types of people. And I feel like we're really expanding the reach of Mises and Austrian economics because we're showing that econ doesn't really discriminate. Everybody wants to wave their identity politics flags and say, oh, you can't be this if you're that. This is the most important thing. And that just doesn't happen. I mean, for crying out loud, some of the criticism we get is so ridiculous. I believe we, in this past year, I believe California, the Libertarian Party elected the first transgender person to any political executive committee in California. She's a Mises Caucus member. Her name is Rachel Johnson, because honestly, no one really even cares that much about identity politics. We're all being harmed by economic policy, and we all want to unite and make the United States and California a better place to live. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, you're singing from my hymn book, so no disagreement from me. I'd love to have things the way they were. And the thing is, I have this reputation these days for being sort of belligerent, and I'll be honest with you, Angela, it's not entirely undeserved, but at the same time, there is a difference, I mean, and this should be appreciated in particular by people who believe in the non-aggression principle. We don't say that violence is never acceptable. It can be in self-defense. And so when I'm, you know, belligerent out there, it's never that I just wake up and say, who's a jerk I hate that I can go attack? That is the last thing in the world that occurs to me. It's I wake up and I say, what bum is giving me a hard time today, you know? And I like to dish it right back out to them. But generally, I am trying to produce something every single day. You know, I'm trying to produce something like this podcast every single weekday. I think I'm covering some valuable information for people. People who actually listen to it really do benefit from it. People who don't listen to it have these wild fantasies about the crazy topics I must cover. So it's very weird to live in these two worlds simultaneously. You've done so many interesting things in your time as a libertarian and, you know, out there in the public. So you were telling me, for example, about a libertarian film festival you put on.
When
was that and what was that like?
So in June of 2019, we sort of did it at the same time as the Los Angeles County Libertarian Party Convention. We had a film festival that followed immediately after. It was the first one we've done. I got to tell you, it was so much work, but it's really cool. We just wanted to promote liberty through culture. So we opened it up. We put it online, just a really simple website, and we got ourselves on Film Freeway, opened up for almost any type of liberty film related submission. And we got a ton of submissions. We got over 20 films submitting. We did a small screening event. People voted on their favorite films and we gave out cash awards. It was really cool. It was sort of like, you could say we were putting a toe in the water and doing a test to see if we could have a really big event in the next couple of years. And I think we will, because this is the sort of activism that people want to see the liberty movement engage in, especially the anarcho-capitalist community, when they're a little bit more hesitant to officially jump into the LP.
Right. So we want to, my view is, even though I think everybody should get into the LP, I want to reach people wherever they are. And if some people just stubbornly won't do what I want them to do, then I'll try and reach them where they are. So that's a great example of that. What exactly is a communist-themed haunted house? You had that in your list of things.
Yeah.
You want to tell me?
Absolutely. So another thing that I did to sort of promote liberty through culture is in 2017, after I'd run for Congress, I thought, oh, I should take a break. And then I realized, well, I don't want to take a break. I hate taking a break. I like doing stuff. So we put together a communist-themed haunted house for Halloween and had people come and sign up and line up into like they were getting in a bread line. And we made it just a scary, you know, kind of silly haunted house event. They would come in, they would get a bag over their head, you know, and I would get dragged away screaming and the lights would go out. They'd get interrogated by someone asking them if they had property, if they were dedicated party members, and then they'd get pushed through this cheesy Halloween maze and then get threatened to be murdered in the end, and then off they'd go. It was really funny. And the other thing that was great about it is once we started promoting it, all of these people who were closet libertarians started to pop out of the woodwork and say they wanted to get involved. That's where I think that activism can have a real impact, is when you use humor, when you use entertainment, people who are a little bit shy about getting into the political realm of it start to poke their nose in and say, I want to be part of it. I agree with you. I just never said so before.
That really is a great idea, these things that you've been doing. And it helps that, as you say, you live in a place with a critical mass of libertarians. So it's plausible that something like this could work out. I don't think you could do a libertarian film festival in the middle of where I live. I mean, maybe in Orlando, maybe, but I'm a little bit outside of there, and I don't, I'm sure I'm the most radical person in the town I live in. But you've also written, now I bought this thing. I bought this cookbook of yours. I just found out that you had it. And so I bought it on Kindle, and I haven't made anything yet, but I intend to. What's the idea? What's it called, and what's the idea behind it?
Okay, so I did write a book. I believe I did this one at the end of 2017 too. I was really on a roll. And it's called The Communist Cookbook, Delicious Dining for the Modern Marxist. You can get it on Amazon. It's a fairly short book and it gives some interesting recipes and ways that you can cook and meals you can come up with if you live in a communist country. It's definitely a joke book, but I do have a more serious sequel coming out that'll be more like a 200-page work called The Socialist Cookbook, and I am trying to finish it by the end of this year.
Ah, okay. Okay. Now, the cookbook has no connection whatsoever with your own dietary restrictions?
Oh, no, no, no. No, I've got a load of dietary restrictions. I'm a typical LA person in a lot of ways, you know, lots of juice fasts, don't eat meat, really pretentious diet. Makes me feel great about myself, right?
Well, even though he's not a vegan, you are reminding me of Michael Bolden, who's always posting pictures of the crazy food he eats, and I always give him a hard time, make fun of him for that. All right, after we take a little break, I want to get into some really juicy stuff, so just a second. Hey, everybody, don't you wish you were at the post office right now? Well, neither do I, but yet I have to be there all the time because I'm always shipping out books to you people. I like selling books. I just don't like spending all day at the post office. Well, that's why you need Stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office, you can do at Stamps.com. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. And once your mail's ready, just hand it to your mail carrier, drop it in a mailbox. It's that simple. And you're not just going to save time, you're also going to save money. Because with Stamps.com, you can get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off shipping rates. No equipment to lease, no long-term commitments. No wonder over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Woods. That's Stamps.com, enter Woods. All right, now let's get back to the LP. Now, I'm not trying to get you in the middle of anything, right? I think it's great the way you stick to your guns, but yet I wouldn't say you're universally liked. Nobody's universally liked in the Libertarian Party.
Yeah.
I mean, even Larry Sharp has his detractors, okay? So not everybody, it's hard to find somebody who's liked by everybody. But still, you move fairly easily in circles other than our immediate ones and outside the Mises Caucus, and that's good. In general, and it's also good given the position that you hold. So I don't in any way want to do anything to compromise that, and I'm not trying to trick you into saying things that are going to alienate you from anybody, nothing like that. But what I have heard is that, and I want people to know about this kind of thing that goes on, that you have really been put through the ringer in terms of people handing out stuff about, you know, that's critical of your personal life and stuff like this. I mean, here you are on a, I assume, volunteer basis doing all this work, killing yourself on top of a full-time job, and it's like no good deed goes unpunished.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got the loser brigade, and I've got people who are obviously emotionally and mentally unstable calling me Angela McLoser. So I call them the McLoser Brigade.
I love that so much.
I even made buttons to pass out at convention to make fun of my haters. I just feel, yeah. So there's a group of people who hate my guts. They are a toxic element of the party in California. And at first, I tried to be cool with them. And I realized that doesn't work because that's not what it's about. They just want to be upset. And I'm one of many targets in a long line, a long history of drama. So I just owned it and decided if they're going to hate on me, I'm just going to make fun of it and make jokes about it. They memed me as Hitler 1 year after convention. So I just took their artwork and I made a mug out of it and a fundraiser. And
I can't tell you the happiness that I feel at this. That this is exactly what you do with monetizing your haters. I just love it.
And that's the only way to just really cope with it and let it not bother you. In order to really deal with the fact that I took their own artwork and yeah, they had to basically report their own artwork as hate speech to get it taken off of Spreadshirt, which I thought was hilarious. And just every time they do something like that, I'll take their ragey tweets or Facebook posts and I'll slap it on a tote bag or something and have my friends buy it. And then we'll just parade it around. Oh, whatever, you know, it's the Make Loser Brigade. They get so incensed and then they just drop it. You just can't let people troll you too hard. You just got to out troll them and laugh it off.
Yeah, and then you definitely have to out-troll them. I know you a bit, let's say, and you and I have talked quite a bit. And let's just say I can say with some degree of confidence that there is no way in the world you would describe yourself as right-wing. Is there?
There's really not. I mean, like, this is Los Angeles. I'm sure that Los Angeles people view me as pretty darn right-wing on the economic spectrum, which, of course, they don't understand. You know, like I mentioned, like, you know, like I've got, you know, trans friends, I've got gay friends. The Mises Caucus is definitely not all white people, especially in LA where it's like, you know, over 60% of the population is Latino. It's kind of this weird misconception, but I don't consider myself right wing.
I really don't see on any grounds that someone could say that about you. And, you know, culturally, every other way. So the idea that you would be Hitler, I mean, what's the... The Hitler thing is so overdone. And it's what's interesting about this is that I find that people who would pull something like this, they're never funny. You know, like if they were funny, they could be really cutting and biting and devastating. But they're never funny because they're scolds, you know. And I don't necessarily even have to bring left and right into this. But it's interesting to note that Paul Krugman, you know, against whom I have a whole podcast, Contra Krugman.
Oh, yeah.
We also have a cruise, you know, the Contra cruise. Paul Krugman said on Twitter not long ago, well, I've really achieved something. There's an entire cruise catering to people who hate me. And I thought that was a revealing way for him to put it, because it never in a million years occurred to me that I would hate, of all people, that I would hate Paul Krugman, some economist at the New York Times. Why would I hate Paul Krugman? I disagree with him strongly. Sometimes he gets something right, and I'm very happy to acknowledge that. But the idea that I hate him is so bizarre to me, and I thought, that really is a case of projection, because in his case, it would be hatred. And I think the problem there, the reason I do slightly bring the left into this, is that for a lot of them, politics is life. There is nothing beyond this. And so if somebody disagrees with you politically, there is no room for them to redeem themselves, because that is life. So I do have to hate you, and you do have no redeeming qualities. And I just can't look at the world that way. There are even people out there who really, really don't like me, that I will come back and say, I think that person's really smart, and I'm glad that person is doing this scholarly work, even if he won't return my calls or something. You know, I'm perfectly capable of doing that, and I think that's what we should be striving to do as human beings, and I think that's what you do.
Absolutely. I do see people, and they generally are representing ideologies on the left. They collectivize and weaponize hate, and I just laugh things off. It doesn't occur to me to hate them, and it's strange, too, to be hated by a group of people, and I wonder why, especially when it comes from, you know, mostly the libertarian sphere. And I've certainly gotten it from the fringes of my social scene in Los Angeles, people who have really bad caricature ideas about libertarians, and they're like, oh, this rich girl who owns guns, and she hates poor people. And I think, are you serious? I do free legal clinics for poor people. I help people who are getting wrongfully evicted, who don't speak a lot of English, who actually are getting screwed over by their landlords because they don't read the contract that they signed. I do a lot of helping of poor people. But because I'm not a hateful person, it takes me a minute to realize, oh, haters exist because they just have a totally different mindset than I do.
Yeah, yeah. And the best revenge against them is just to keep on doing what you're doing. I mean, I just keep on churning out content just over and over and over, like they're not even there. And then I have fun. I don't ever mention their names, so they never get the satisfaction of getting a bump from me. Mm-hmm. But my favorite tweet of 2020 so far was, there was a big, big mob of them going after me at the end of last year. And so my tweet was, and I made money off of this because of, I have a strategy for it. And so in January of 2020, I posted on Twitter, it was the following: them: there's no way Woods can monetize this attack on him. And then it was, and now turn your speakers down if you have kids in the car, because there's a word you won't want them to repeat. After that, I have me saying, me: greetings from the Bahamas, bitches. And it's got a picture of me in the Bahamas, which it was a trip I funded entirely on money I made by monetizing these haters. That is the way you do it. And you have fun, you're out trolling them. And as I say, if ever any of them were clever or funny, then maybe I would have met my match. But so far, that hasn't happened. Now, you just had your state convention in California. For people who have never been to a libertarian state convention, can you tell us, first of all, what that's like? And secondly, how did this one go?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you that we had a lot of people from National visiting and obviously a lot of presidential candidates. And as someone who was on the convention committee, we were informed that it was the best state convention most of them had ever visited. So when I say that to make sure you're aware that although I love the LP and I know everyone works really hard on their state conventions, don't expect this at every state convention you go to. Ours was 3-day long. It was absolutely packed full of speakers, a lot of them really good speakers. We had Andrew Heaton, we had Mark and Brian from the Lions of Liberty. We had a lot of really great people, local activism. Oh, Michael Bolden also gave a talk, you know, because he's a local LA Liberty person too. We have, you know, really nice lunch options. It was at a really nice hotel. We have debates in the evenings. We had a presidential debate. We had a presidential forum. We had the chairs debate, all kinds of really cool stuff. In California, we have what's the best way to put it? Oh, a recall campaign going against our awful governor, Gavin Newsom. So we had the organizer of that come and speak. All different kinds of speakers. And then, of course, for those of you who just really enjoy pain and suffering, you can skip all of that and stay in the business portion of the convention and argue about bylaws and platform.
Yeah, and by the way, that's exactly what I was thinking of when you said that you love details and stuff. I thought, well, then you're perfect for this position.
Oh, yeah. And we had a very large Mises Caucus block in there. And we got a lot of things accomplished. It was fantastic. We got some good bylaws changes passed for anybody who cares about that sort of stuff. And then when we lost quorum because people were just pulling their hair out and had to go to the bar, I said, hey, guys, great job on what we got done. The rest of it is going to maybe happen next year, maybe not. We're not going to stress over it. So that's sort of what a state convention is like. You get a lot of people from out of town. You also get a lot of people who are non-voting anarchists who just want to come and see speakers. So it's a really great social event. You also get to meet a lot of libertarians from all over the state who come in. And thankfully, you also get to meet a lot of new people. It was really cool to see a lot of Mises Caucus people saying, I am here for the first time. I've never done a political event before. I just signed up from the party because of people like Tom Woods, Michael Heiss, Josh Smith, whoever it is. They're like, I've just been listening. I'm hearing the plugs. And finally, I'm passionate about it. It seems like it's getting that Ron Paul fire again. So I'm in. So that was a really encouraging thing for me to hear. And what else was the highlight? Oh, I passed out flowers on Valentine's Day. So take that, haters. The Mises Caucus passed out flowers and snacks. I call this the Concierge Caucus.
Yeah, you're really something. See, I could easily, given all the demands on your time, I could have imagined myself, frankly, saying, I'm sorry, everybody. I've done everything I can, but I just have to step down. You know, your energy and dedication is frankly a real inspiration to me. And I'm not trying to be cheesy about that. I mean that genuinely.
I appreciate it. It's really hard for me to sit still. You know, I was busy all convention. I'm generally busy all the time. And I just love it. I love doing Liberty stuff. You know, all throughout the convention, my friends Ryan and Tracy and Matt and Ben are saying, did you eat? And I say, no, I'm too busy to eat. And they're like, you need to eat. Oh, fine. You know, I'll have half a protein shake. Go away. I got something to do. I mean, I love you guys. You're great. And then just on to the next project, you know?
Yeah. Wow. As I say, sounds like not the woods of today, certainly, but a little bit like the woods of old. So, all right, I just want to pick your brain on one more thing. I look at 2020, and I've been saying for a long time that I think 2020 is actually going to be a difficult year for the Libertarian Party, and it wouldn't have mattered who the nominee was. It's going to be a difficult year because I think the country is more polarized now than it was 4 years ago. I don't think that's even debatable. Who would debate that?
Right.
And, you know, every 4 years we get people on the so-called right wing saying this is the most important election of our lifetimes. And I'm sure they say it on the left also. This is the most important election of our lifetimes. And the next one is always even more important than the last. So there's never an election where they say, okay, things are good enough that if you feel like voting third party, go ahead and do that. You know, that never, ever. It's always, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. So the thing is, if we nominate somebody like a Jacob Hornberger, who's very, very principled and a very good guy, very smart, articulate, but doesn't have the name recognition, and he doesn't do as well, obviously, as a former governor, you know, multiple term former governor, then people say, aha, that goes to show that your stupid strategy doesn't work. I think anybody is going to have a hard time because in this cycle, people will say, look, I've got my objections to Trump as much as you do, but I'll take that guy over Bernie, you know, and that's what they're going to say. I think it's going to be hard to overcome that.
I think you're right in some respects. However, I don't see politics really changing a lot in the foreseeable future from hardcore red team, blue team ideology. I do see some people, though, getting a little bit burned out, especially when you see characters like Bloomberg get on stage, who is really just the blue Trump. And so I am hoping that we will take as a win getting people over to our side, people who are just tired of seeing basically the same nonsense paraded by two different, quote unquote, different political parties. I want to capitalize on people who are starting to recognize what nonsense it is, people who are understanding that a lot of the positions and things pushed by Donald Trump are actually just sort of centrist Democrat policies. And, you know, I hope we don't get Bernie. If we get a Bernie person in a Bernie, a progressive person in the presidency, obviously, you know, I hope that we get a lot of gridlock from Congress so that progressive policies aren't pushed. But I hope that we'll also get some people who realize how whacked out it is and that they'll flip and become libertarians, because we have so much fear-mongering in politics right now, but also so much idealization. It's just people are grossly naive. And I think that the LP has a wonderful opportunity to come in and sweep up defectors. So I'm still excited about the Hornberger campaign. I think he's a great messenger. And I know that Gary Johnson and people like him, maybe they have more name recognition, but they don't get people excited. There's no excitable messaging coming out of those kinds of guys. I appreciate what they did, but come on. Let's dream a little bit bigger and let's have a little bit more confidence in ourselves and our candidates.
Well, fair enough. And that's more or less what I got as an answer when I asked Scott Horton about this. And I consider him to be a great hero, and he's been very much behind, you know, trying to bring people into the Libertarian Party. And you know, it's funny, I would have thought up till recently that, well, surely, you know, we may have our differences, but we can all agree Scott Horton's a hero. That guy's a hero. I mean, he has sacrificed everything in his life to learn everything about foreign policy so he can defend the cause of peace as in as informed a way as possible. That guy's a hero. And I find out there are some people in the Loser Brigade who don't even like Scott Horton. I mean, what is it? I give up trying to satisfy these people.
I mean, I can't imagine who in their right mind would like Scott Horton. He's like an angel. He's like an angelic being. He is.
He transcends this plane of existence, is all I can say. And I'm just so pleased and honored to have been friends with him for so many years. So, yeah, if you don't like Scott Horton, I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know, crawl back into the dumpster that you crawled out of. If you're a Scott Horton hater, you need a divine intervention at that level. I don't know what
that
else
level. I'm so unhappy that I scheduled a trip months and months and months in advance, like way in advance, a trip to Scotland. The very time that Scott is going to be debating Bill Kristol in New York, I would have gone to that. But there's no rescheduling a trip to Scotland. I mean, I would have to take a huge hit, and I just can't do it. But they've got like 800 people have already bought tickets for that, and to see Scott finally. I mean, this is something that people like you and I would have dreamed of for years. That one of our people, you know, the best person we could possibly put up for our side, gets to debate one of the people who, you know, I'm sure the other side considers one of their best people, or at least a consistent voice for the current foreign policy, Bill Kristol, and to see them go at it in a debate, it's thrilling. I mean, it's thrilling. But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted. If people are in your area want to get involved in the LP, what links would you send them to? Obviously, the state party, but also your local party.
Yeah, it's a funny website name. It's lplac.us. That's where you can go. We have a really great local activist, Ryan Lopez, who set up our county website. He's a great Mises Caucus guy. LA County has a ton of Mises Caucus activity, by the way. It's not exclusive, but we've got a lot of people in the party who are Mises friendly. You can find me on Facebook, Angela McArdle. You can find me. I think I'm on every social media outlet that there is. So I'm really easy to find. But if you want to just go straight to the party, go to lplac.us.
Okay. So I'm going to link to that on the show notes page. There'll be stuff, including your link to your book, which, look, by the way, these look like genuine recipes to me. So I'm intending to make them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll find out. Once I'm
rock
done.
Rock and roll.
Well, listen, thank you, Angela, for your time and for all the work you're putting in. As I say, it's a genuine inspiration because we're Facebook friends and I see your updates. I shake my head and I think, oh gosh, this poor woman. I mean, like, you work harder than like anybody I know, and I wish I could do something.
I just love it. I don't know. It's sick. I love doing this to myself.
Well, that's tremendous. I mean, I feel that way too, in a way that I want to, you know, work hard, play hard. In your case, it's work hard, work hard, work hard, and eventually play hard. But I want to be somebody who at the end of my life, I say, I lived it, you know, I really lived it to the fullest. I did everything. I squeezed everything I could out of every moment. And you're definitely doing that. So thanks so much again.
You are so welcome.
All right, everybody. That is our episode for today. Tomorrow, we welcome Brett Vanott of the School Sucks podcast back onto the Tom Woods Show, so you will not want to miss that. So make sure you subscribe over at tomwoods.com/apple. That's how you subscribe on Apple Podcasts. So go do that, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.